Welcome to Building Your T-Shirt Empire, powered by ShirtAgency.com. Get ready to take a trip inside the apparel industry for the best tips, tricks, and interviews. And now, here's your host, Cole Lundstrom.
All right, so I am here with Brendan. Brendan has done $6.5 million in e-commerce sales, so I figured I'd have him come in and talk to us about what he does online that so many people are clearly doing wrong.
Hi, my name is Brendan, and I got started with internet marketing probably about 10 years ago, give or take. The first 6 years was an absolute wash. I just learned how to basically build people WordPress sites, got paid just enough money to survive, because I absolutely refused to get a real job. So I got through with that for a while, and then about 4 years ago, I stumbled across t-shirts as that trend was just getting started. And we started this new brand and kind of started building it up, and we really started hitting Facebook ads hard, and that first year just absolutely destroyed it. A lot of people weren't doing it the way we were doing it, and we got really aggressive with it. And I'm really glad we started building the brand, because that having that brand built and not just going after the short-term cash is what's allowed me to get to this point today.
Yeah, so like, what was the difference? Like, what year did you really see it take off? And what platform were you using in the beginning before like you and me ever started working together?
So I started doing this in October 2013, and right off the bat, it started working. I had a surfing page that I created a design for and just posted on the page and ended up selling 100 shirts on Teespring.
Wait, 100 shirts from a picture for no ad money?
No ad money.
So this was like the glory days of Facebook?
Yeah, so it was probably about 70,000 about 70,000 fans on this Facebook page for surfing.
How'd you get those 70,000?
Well, I ran ads like a year before that, just trying to build something fun.
Like a like campaign?
Yeah.
So what do you think that cost you back then? Because it's more expensive now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I probably spent about 2 pennies each like, so whatever the math is on that.
So you spent the money not trying to sell anything just to have an active audience?
Yeah, because my buddy Chris told me to start building up a page around just any sort of thing that I liked, and I could use that to make money. And so I didn't really know how I was going to make money from it, honestly.
You just figured
it out. I just figured
well.
I'd make a page that's about something I liked so that I would at least enjoy making the post about it.
Yeah.
And so we were using CPA offers to try to make money from them. So basically we were just trying to get people to fill out lead forms, and we'd get like $2 a pop.
Mm-hmm. Was that like for solar panels or something?
Yeah, random stuff like that. Or there was like a scholarship offer we were doing back in the day that would pay like $4 per lead. And so with the surfing thing, I was definitely not profitable, and because it was just the wrong demographic for that kind of thing anyway. But then when t-shirts came along, I made that first design that was, I think it's like Keep Calm and Surf.
Yeah.
And it was a simple design, made it in Photoshop in like 30 minutes, put it up, made 100 sales, and thought, wow, okay, this might actually work.
Well, yeah, that's thousands of bucks in a few minutes. So what was it like trying to figure out like, okay, now I'm going to monetize this audience? And like, what were some of the most obvious stumbling blocks you came upon in the very beginning?
Honestly, there really weren't that many stumbling blocks.
So it just skyrocketed because the audience was engaged?
So I did that first, and then I thought, okay, whoa, something's here. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to a friend of mine who had a couple pages with a million likes each. And I said, hey, why don't I make the designs for you, set up the shirt campaigns, I'll do all the hard work, I'll even post it on your page for you, and we'll just split the profits 50-50.
Yeah, so you just tried to team up with someone with a huge audience.
Yeah, exactly. So I just figured they have the audience, I have something to sell the audience, they didn't have to do any extra work whatsoever, which, of course, they're going to love.
Yeah.
And they get 50% commissions. And so I started making designs for that page, and that really took off. And then that Christmas, something really big happened with one of his pages. One of the guys who that page was built around said something really dumb that went viral. And
what'd he say? What happened?
It was something religious, and then I think they canceled him from the show briefly. And because of that, it hit the news cycles.
Was this a reality show?
Yeah.
Involving animals?
Yeah. And so it got...
the fly?
Yeah. And so it got pretty big.
Yeah, I remember that page.
And so I ran this campaign during Christmas. Me and Sarah are up in Chicago, and I keep refreshing this. And we sold, I think we ended up selling like 7,000 of this shirt.
Of what he said that was offensive?
Yeah.
Or that's what you just quoted him.
Well, no, we didn't quote him. We made a shirt that supported him.
Oh, okay.
Saying, how could you suspend this guy? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we sold, it was at least seven, I think it was 6,000 or 7,000 shirts. And then...
That was all Teespring.
Yeah. And then everybody tried to rip us off. Like, yeah. Everybody took the exact design that I did. And then they all took credit for being the one... So they all took credit for being the ones who made that design. And they used that to sell courses on how to do Teespring, saying, hey, look at this design that we made, that we sold.
The people that robbed you actually made a how to sell t-shirt
Yeah,
course?
Based on the design they took from me. Based on the idea they took from me. And so whenever I called them out on it, they were like, well, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't care. So,
well, you just made another design, right? I mean,
I made $30,000 without spending a dime on ads.
Just
really,
viral marketing, yeah, essentially.
I really just didn't care. I was like, whatever. But, so that was the moment that I was...
You were all in right there.
That was the moment that everything was real. Real, real. And so that following year, January, February, we decided to take what we were doing and make it into more of a theme and create a brand around it.
Mm-hmm. Because, and not do the one-off stuff.
Yeah, I mean, because we were making... It was kind of all themed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we just kind of took the theme that we were already doing, made a brand around it, started putting the brand name on every shirt, and then created our own page. And instead of paying this guy half the profits on everything, we made our own page so that we could run ads from our page.
So walk me through that like conversation with Sarah. Like, what were the demographics you were focusing on? And what was it that you did like right, do you think? Starting from zero on that page.
So starting from zero on that page, I mean, I still remember we were sitting in Hermosa in that studio. And I was telling Sarah, like, hey, we need to make a brand. And then we riffed for about probably 3 hours on what it should be called. And then when we finally came up with the name, you know, I had to make sure that it first wasn't trademarked. Second, we could get the domain.
Yeah.
Which we could do both for. And then from there, it's just a matter of taking the designs we already had. We put those on shirts with the brand name on the front. And then just started... it was basically the process of just setting up the page, setting up the brand, making a bunch of memes, uploading a whole bunch of memes just to get content on it, so that whenever I started running ads, people didn't just look at the page and say, oh, it's a dead page.
How much content were you putting out in the beginning, like daily? That was just
so
free content.
When we first started, we put up 50 memes. So there were just a ton of things that people could just browse through.
Okay, before they even had... you had one follower,
yeah,
you
before
uploaded
we even had
50
one
memes.
Followers. Because people are going to want to... Because people naturally are going to be skeptical of anything.
Right, and an empty page isn't very attractive.
An empty page looks very sketchy.
Yeah.
And especially 4 years ago. It's crazy how far we've come that in 4 years, people now are willing to buy couches online. 4 years ago, people barely would want to buy a t-shirt online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount of emails I would get 4 years ago of, are you legit? Am I really going to get that shirt I bought? I mean, I know, 3 or 4 times a day, I'm answering emails of, am I really going to get that shirt? And now nobody cares. Now it's just second nature.
Yeah. Right?
So I set up the memes to just kind of start getting, so that people had something to look at, and then start running the ads, the shirts.
Who was making the memes? Were you just stealing them?
No, I don't know at the beginning, actually.
Started with stealing. Because now you're making them, or you like pay someone to make them? What are you doing now?
I did, yeah. I paid someone to make 2,000 of them.
Whoa, how do you pay someone to make 2,000 memes?
We've hired about 4 Filipino virtual assistants in the last... few years, and 2 of them specifically, their full-time job was to do graphics. And so every week we would expect at least 50 to 60 new memes or graphics to go on the page.
Didn't you have like some serious language problems if they're creating memes? Or
yeah, but I mean,
so were you editing or were you giving them ideas?
So we would give them ideas. What we would do is we would search for quotes on, say, Pinterest or even Facebook from other pages. We would find quotes that people would like to share. Because, I mean, all the information is out there. So you see what people are already sharing. Take those quotes, put them on a meme, on a meme with like a nice picture in the background, and then just test them. And so they ended up making probably about 2,000, probably even more, honestly, over the last 4 years. But if they don't do well, they get taken out of the queue, if they do well, they stay in.
And so in the queue, meaning you're just going to repost it again at a different time, or?
Yeah, because we use Meet Edgar for most of our posting.
What was it called?
Meet Edgar.
Meet Edgar. Yeah. I don't think I've ever used that. So that's is it kind of similar to like a Hootsuite where it schedules all your posts?
Exactly. So I could say I want a meme to go out every day at 1:30, 5:30, 10:30. I want a promotional post to go out at 2:30, so on, you know? And so it'll just cycle through it until I take it out.
And will it delete the old stuff, or does it just make your feed look like it's being looped?
It'll make your feed look like it's being looped.
But no one cares.
But because I have 300-something memes being looped, they're not going to loop. If I post 3 a day, they're not going to loop for 100 days.
And no one's scrolling that far.
And there's so we have 1.7 million fans on that page, and 100,000 people see it the first time. What are the chances the same exact 100,000 people are going to see it the second time?
Tell me more about that, the whole having 1.7 million fans and only getting visibility on 100,000. Is that just because of the algorithm, or is that because of timing? Because I know a lot of people have been complaining about that more and more every year. It seems like the free reach of your page is becoming more and more, like, miniature.
Yeah, but I don't think it's Facebook's problem. I really don't think Facebook's the one causing the problem. I think the problem's coming from too much supply and limited demand.
So people are putting out so much content that people don't even want to consume.
There is just so much content every day, and you can only consume so much. So the fact that every day there's more and more content and people can only see so much, I mean, what, you just got to be happy with the numbers you get. And that's why I always lean towards trying to build my own email list, because or even maybe your messenger list, trying to build lists where you have a little bit more control over who can see it. It's Facebook's game, you know, it's Instagram's game. They're going to control how many people can see your stuff. But in the end, if people are liking what you're putting out, you'll still get seen. I mean, I've heard so many people complain about reach, but I've never really had that big of a problem.
Because people are still engaged.
Because people still like what I post. But there have been times where people have not liked what I posted for a few days in a row, and that's hurt my reach for like a week or two. So then I had to go back and redo my schedule a little bit, add a little bit more things that are more shareable, get the shares back up, and then the reach comes back up again.
So, okay, so you get this new page going, just to go backwards with the story a little bit. You get the new page going, you pay some guy to do 2,000 memes, and then on your launch, did you launch it with a big ad spend? Or did you launch it, what did you do to go from 0 to 1.7 million on that page?
So when we started it, I had a very strict rule of I could not spend more than $200 a day on ads.
Which is still a decent amount, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like a small amount of money. That's more than most people make at their job.
Yeah, so I put up an ad, and every dollar that I spent, I would make about $4 to $5.
On t-shirt sales?
Yeah, in profits. Mm-hmm. So after like the second day of realizing, okay, I just spent $200 and made $800, I got a little aggressive and went from $200 a day to like $1,000 a day.
And did Sarah know?
She knew after I told her we made $3,000 that day.
Oh, okay. You told her once you had the win.
Yeah. She said, how in the world did we get that? And I'm like, well, remember that $200 limit I had? I kind of went past that a little bit. And so then it was just a matter of how much do I have in my bank account.
So you just started doubling down.
Yeah, I just started trying to spend as absolute much as possible without it. Because there's a point where you start spending too much. And when we went from 1,000 to 5,000 a day, the profits went down a little bit. So
do you have any idea what that was being caused by? Just like saturation?
I think, there's a point where you can only reach so many people.
Oh, so you were showing the same ad to the same people 2-3 times at that point.
Yeah. I mean, there were some ads that I ran at least $100,000 to. I mean, I can go back in my system.
In like a year or in a month?
In probably like a 5-month period.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a lot of airline miles.
Oh, it was wild. It was wild. That 2014 year, we had 3 months where we hit $100,000 in profit or more.
Yeah, just back to back.
Back to back to back.
So is that how you're still running it to this day, where you're just spending a ton on ads? Or because things
now
have changed, right?
Now things have changed. So the fact that there's way more competition in the ad market, it has created a more difficult environment. There's way more competition when it comes to selling shirts to people. I mean, especially considering I've had to deal with so many people stealing my designs and selling to my audience. But I still think, I mean, we actually went back and started looking at all of our competitors that we had, and we're one of probably three left.
Because so many people died.
Just because so many people just gave up.
Which is kind of why Teespring has so many problems, I would assume. Many of their old sellers couldn't keep it up, and then Teespring was too big for their own overhead.
There were so many issues there. I think there's a lot of people, because I mean, I'm telling you, in the beginning, you couldn't lose.
In 2014, it was just money in, money out.
In 2014, it was just too easy. You could have made the ugliest design, put out the worst ad, and probably still made money.
Yeah.
I mean, now you have to think, you've got to compete. You have to compete with all these random people who are making shirts. You have to compete with not just Americans who are making shirts now, but like Filipinos who are making shirts, Chinese who are making shirts. Then you have to think about...
And their profit margins are nothing.
Yeah, and then you have to... And they're selling shirts... They're selling them for... We're only making $2, $3 a piece because they're just... They're playing the price game. And we've always refused to play the price game.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have Amazon merch. I mean, every single design we've made, you can go onto Amazon merch a week later and you'll see almost an exact knockoff.
Mm-hmm.
But they just make the design just a little bit different so that they can get away with it.
Yeah.
But there are probably, I think, a group of six people who watch our stuff intently. And every single time I post a new design...
You just watch it show up.
You watch it show up.
It's crazy.
I mean, but that's the world, you know? But hey, I don't mind them copying me because it still means I'm ahead. And my designs are always so much better, I could care less, so...
Yeah. So what do you think is the play now? I mean, you had that moment in time and clearly you were there at the right time to capitalize on it. But what do you think the move is now for either someone starting or somebody who has, you know, just kind of a okay brand that they've kind of launched, but it's not crushing it? Do you think the game is still Facebook? Do you think Facebook's dead? Do you think...
No, God, no.
Influencers? What do you think?
Facebook is hands down the best way to target your audience. I think influencers, absolutely, especially if you're playing that kind of a game. If you're playing a game where it's a lifestyle brand, they really can connect with an influencer. Without question. Especially if you can find an influencer that has a huge following that you can maybe just give a piece of the business to and say, hey, I'm going to do all the work. All you have to do is just wear the shirt. If you can do that, you're gold.
Yeah. That's if you can basically manage the merch for someone else almost.
Basically, yeah. But, I mean, if you're starting off right now, I would say focus on building the audience because that's where it's going to be. Because even if shirts don't work, as long as you have an audience and you know what they need, you can sell them something.
Like all that survival gear that Chris was selling at one point.
Yeah.
All that survival gear that just like to guys who are ready for the world to end.
Yep. I mean, don't be stuck on a product. That's probably the most important thing. That's what I've learned over time is being stuck on a product makes it so much harder. But the fact that we had an audience has allowed us to transition from 100% shirt sales being our number one mode of revenue to now being able to give them content that is the what they want to consume, and we still make money without having to spend much money.
And that's because of just like AdSense?
Yeah, just running AdSense or, you know, Facebook Instant Articles, and you get Facebook ads on the articles now.
So what do you think is like a strategy for nailing down demographics? If you're staring at Facebook Ad Manager, how do you actually like write an ad? Especially if you're writing it to an audience that isn't already yours.
I mean, I can keep it so simple that it's almost ridiculous. Because when you have the Facebook pixel on your website and the pixel starts noticing, hey, you know, the normal customer going to this site looks like this. I literally make an ad. The only button I click on the targeting is the women.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, hey, target women. That's it.
So you're running off of your existing pixel data because they're just matching similar people off your pixel data.
Exactly. Because they know who comes to the site, they know who actually buys, and I just trust Facebook to do it. And I mean, that's literally all I have to do. But let's say if there's a design that's kind of specific to a certain sub-niche of my audience, then I'll target that sub-niche with the interest, but I still keep it broad as possible.
So you're not putting, you know, likes Kate Beckinsale, the actress, as your niche. You're putting, like, people who like movies... Who are women?
Exactly.
You're not going really deep dive.
Exactly.
I mean, do you think the deep dive hurts you? Like it actually limits your audience in a bad way? Or do you think maybe you're overspending when you do that?
I think it makes me overspend.
Okay.
And I don't know why. It just does. I mean, and I just trust Facebook because they have spent so much money making their ad platform, mm-hmm. and they have AI built into it. They know how to run it. Facebook's ad platform is the best, like the absolute best.
Yeah.
So why not trust it? I mean, it hasn't failed me yet.
So are you running exclusively in the ads manager, or are you just pressing boost on a post sometimes?
No, I use the power editor to create all my ads.
Okay. And are you doing like, I've heard in the past people were doing a strategy of the exact same ad 3-4 times, and then when one would start to run up better, they'd kill the copies. Is that strategy dead, or is that still valid?
Honestly, I don't know.
You didn't do that?
Never used it.
Did you A-B test at all, or how did
you
run?
Oh, yeah, totally. No, I mean, so what I'll do is I'll make the first ad, and then, so I'll make the first ad, and I'll say, like, I'll target Android phones.
Okay.
Then I'll copy it, make the next ad, target iPhones. Then I'll copy that, make the next ad targeting desktop feed. And then I'll select all three, and if I want to test, like, another ad, I'll select all three, duplicate all three, and then change, like, one little detail of the ad, like maybe a different photo. And right. That's how I'll go through that.
So then out of those six, what is your goal? Like, what is the kind of click-through rate, or what's the, like, what demographic, or not demographics, what like details? What's the word? Yeah. What are you looking at?
So what I basically look at is...
Before the money actually starts happening, how do you know if something's failing or...
So, I mean,
succeeding?
I can look at something now and kind of know. So I'll look at how many shares is it getting, because that tells me whether or not people are even interested in it. Because if they're willing to share it, more than likely they're halfway interested.
Yeah, I don't share anything.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But then I'll look at how many clicks it gets. So I'll look at the cost per click.
What do you like to keep that down to?
I mean, it depends. I mean... So first I'll look at shares, then I'll look at cost per click. Like, let's say a cost per click, let's say five of the ads are under $1, but one of them is $2. I mean, obviously that $2 one is not performing nearly as well as the other five, so why keep it going? But then I'll look at cost per sale, and usually once I've spent over $20 is whenever I start to want to cancel things.
Just because, yeah, you just watch the money go away.
If I haven't made a sale by $20, I start really wanting to cancel it.
$20 per ad or $20 split among those
per
six
ad,
ads?
Per ad.
So almost like $120 in testing.
Basically.
Okay. So then you've got a sale at $20 is literally one sale, or what are you expecting after?
I'm expecting at least one sale by $20.
Okay. Out of one of those ads.
Out of one, yeah. But honestly, if I spend $120 and I only get one sale,
that's a bad business model.
Yeah, I'm gonna be pissed.
So what happens when you are in that situation? Do you bail?
Oh yeah.
Or are you just...
You gotta be ego free. In this business, you have to be ego free. Because you're gonna create a lot of designs, you're gonna say, "All right, this is gonna work. This is the best design I've ever made. So many people are gonna buy this." You post it, you run ads, you spend $100. And if you can't step aside from your ego and just say, "Okay, never mind, it doesn't work," you will spend way more than you ever should have trying to force it.
What do you think in now's Facebook advertising world? Like, if you don't have an audience, you have the best t-shirt idea ever, and you only have $100 to spend on your ad, what do you think is the kill point? Is break-even the kill point in sales? Is 20 shirts the kill point? For you, if you were poorer and in that situation, what would you think is reasonable?
If I had a really killer shirt, I thought it was a really killer shirt, I would try to get... people I already knew to buy it. And if you can't get somebody you already know to buy it, or someone who you know would like something like that, they said they wouldn't actually pay you money for it, then I would think twice.
So you'd go really old school.
Oh, yeah.
Literally,
yeah. I would
just
hustle
slinging,
it first.
Slinging shirts to a few people.
I would hustle it first if all I had $100.
Yeah. Well, $100 is spent on ads. No. Oh. Not your last $100.
God,
but,
I was about
to
say, yeah. No, I mean, I'd definitely not spend
my last
$100.
If you were on your
last
$100, yeah.
There are a lot of other things I'd be spending my money on if that's all I had left.
But okay, so without it being that dramatic, if you had $100 to spend on ads, what do you think your break point would be? I mean, would you spend it on a like campaign and not even spend it on trying to sell shirts, or how would you go about it?
It's a tough question.
This is a hard-hitting podcast.
Yeah, totally, man. That's a tough question. I mean, because there's so many details there that I don't know.
Yeah, like which ones?
Like, what's the design? Is it broad? Is it specific?
Let's say it's a pretty Let's call it a streetwear brand.
Okay.
That's very brand focused. It's not a broad like joke shirt. It's more of a like you know, they want to be Supreme, that kind of a brand, where they want to have their own
like
brand.
Like a Suburban Riot.
Yeah, like or something. Yeah, like that. Something where they want to be a standalone brand, not a shirt that just references something broad.
Man, I don't know. See, that one gets tough because you don't really have an audience to hit. You're more just kind of just throwing it out there and hoping the right person sees it.
So maybe the money's better spent going after like an influencer at that point?
Yeah, probably. For that kind of a thing, I would probably think so. I mean, it's one of those things because like my shirts have a very specific audience, like very specific. And not only that, the shirts all have sayings on them that are very shareable.
Right.
But you're talking like...
You're almost doing meme t-shirts.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So a shirt like Supreme or Suburban Riot or something, it's not necessarily a shareable shirt. So you run these ads and the viral effect isn't there really there.
Because people don't think it's hilarious. Or...
Yeah, because I'm not going to share a shirt, a Henley. I'm not going to be like, this is such a badass Henley. Let me share this to all my friends because they're going to love the fact that I shared this Henley with them.
Right.
I mean, that makes no sense, you know? So it gets to be one of those things where you just have to put it on a really good looking dude that has a big audience and make it look good.
So maybe you can find a YouTuber or something who's
exactly.
Just,
I mean, that
who's
that's...
not already slinging merch. Because everyone seems to be slinging merch right now on YouTube.
Yeah, no, totally. Everybody is. I mean, why not? It's so easy to do.
Yeah. I saw Casey Neistat launch his like this week or two.
What's his say?
It says work harder in white ink on a cheap black hoodie. And he stood there and he did his like Casey Wiggle.
Probably sold 5,000.
And he talked about way more. Because my guys, I don't print for Casey. And my guys are doing way more than 5,000.
That's nuts.
So I wouldn't be surprised so if Casey did like 15,000. But it says work harder, white ink, like it's like a Gildan hoodie, cheapest hoodie they could get, and it's just that's the plan.
I mean, Peter McKinnon just came out with his own like hats and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he probably sold thousands of hats.
Yeah.
For no other reason than he is who he is.
There's this crazy hunter guy that I started watching on Instagram, it's like Cameron Haynes, I think, and he has his own camo hat line. That's all he's selling, just camo hats. He's not selling like.
Probably a simple logo on him.
Yeah, like nothing. It's a little, it's like a antler and like his name.
But that takes us back to the whole, if you have an audience, mm-hmm. you can sell them almost anything.
Right, because they like you.
Exactly. And so let's go back to where we were with that brand.
Mm-hmm.
What they might want to do instead is start, especially if you're a lifestyle brand and you're just trying to sell brand shirts, start an Instagram page that projects that lifestyle, shows people what your brand stands for, and fill it up so that people can see that. And don't expect it to go viral yet, because, I mean, you have to first have to get that. So you get that set up, then take a compilation of your best videos you put on there, and then take that $100 and spend $20 to get 5 different influencers to share that compilation video you made, and just get people to come to your Instagram page and start following you. And so, yeah, you'll probably make a few sales because people are going to click on the link in the bio.
But really, you're investing the money in an audience.
Really, you're investing to build that audience.
Yeah.
And it's building that audience is going to allow you to sell more.
So you believe just get 50,000 followers before you even expect to make money?
Something. I mean, you have to build an audience.
Yeah.
Especially these days, you have to have an audience. I mean, it's trying to come out of nowhere and sell shirts that are just based on a brand is very difficult.
Yeah, it basically doesn't work.
I mean, back in the 90s, you could just throw a check mark on a shirt and sell 100,000 of them just because it meant something to someone. But mm-hmm. these days, very little people are going out and just buying shirts because they have a logo on the front.
Yeah.
They're only going to buy that shirt with a logo on the front if it means something to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've noticed, especially like Under Armour and Nike, they've gotten more and more into the graphics game.
Yeah.
They're getting less simple lately. I've seen a lot of big graphics on like Under Armour, which they didn't do for the longest time.
Because I think people want to say something with what they're wearing now.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're not wearing they either want to say something or just wear a plain shirt.
And adults also don't seem to be so worried about looking casual. Like, you can sell a 41-year-old man a graphic tee now, which is kind of unprecedented.
I'm selling 65-year-old women graphic tees.
Oh, well. Yeah.
I mean, Yeah. And the whole point is that they buy my shirt and they feel more confident when they wear it because people compliment them on it.
And people will wear that, like, to work. They won't even have the whole, like, shirt and tie thing just doesn't seem to matter, like, almost at all, really.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen, like, with these millions of platforms that you could be fully invested in? Are you actually going after every single platform with your brands right now? Or are you, like, focusing in on Facebook and you completely ignore Twitter?
I focus.
You're a focus.
And the reason why is because I think being focused allows you to build up one strong core audience. Hmm. And then from that one strong core audience, you can build out. So because I started with Facebook, built up the Facebook, now I can link out to Instagram. So now we have like 100,000 on Instagram.
Oh, so it's not even close. Like, you really are, like, super Facebook heavy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So 1.7 on Facebook and then 100,000 on Instagram almost just because? Like, they just wanted to follow you twice?
Yeah, well, we started sending people over to Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Instagram viral effect kind of hit in. And Instagram was giving us, like, 400 new followers a day for a while. And it built up. I mean, I haven't really run too many ads to Instagram at all. But now we also have 120,000 email addresses, too. Because I've gone through this whole process of trying to make sure I have a little bit of diversity.
Yeah.
And then Snapchat, we probably have 5,000 people on it, but we never use it.
Yeah, I don't understand Snapchat. Right.
I mean, it's just a matter of just having people who are willing to post every day on it.
I just don't know if it'll...
It's a brand play.
I mean, the stock has gone really, really south. So I wonder if Instagram's kind of killing it because they just jacked all the best features. The way that they did Instagram stories and stuff.
I think it's a different market. I mean, I think Gary Vee hits it right on the head when he talks about Snapchat and how it's an underpriced market.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us don't understand it. You know, the anybody above 25 has no clue how to use Snapchat. But I think if you're going after the 13 to 18 range, Snapchat could work. You just have to have people who can put content on there.
Like, constantly.
Yeah, and that's a challenge. I mean, that's a challenge. But then we've also got 40,000 on Pinterest, and so we'll post on Pinterest quite a bit.
So where are you sending all the traffic now? It's mostly all going to an Amazon page?
No, it's all going to the website.
So the website is because you ended up using Amazon's warehouses, right?
Yeah, but the website hooked up with Amazon fulfillment. So
so they think they're buying from you. It just happens to be at Amazon's warehouse.
They are buying from us.
Well, right, but I mean,
and it just ships from Amazon's warehouses.
Right, but that's all just a link between Shopify and Amazon.
Yeah.
On the back end.
Yeah, and it's all set up automatically.
And then what's it like selling on Amazon's platform? Does Amazon's platform give you additional sales besides what you're getting from your own leads?
I think Amazon's platform has outsold our website.
So how does that work? Can you tell us a little bit, like, some sort of Amazon strategy if someone wanted to launch on Amazon?
Well, the key... So Amazon reached out to us a few years ago because so many people were looking for our brand. They were going to Amazon typing our brand name in. And so one of the Amazon salespeople came to us and said, hey, there's a lot of people here searching for you. You might want to have your stuff listed on us. So we set it up. And I think the real key to Amazon is just making sure you have the keywords that describe what you're selling in the listing. And then from there, drive the initial sales to Amazon to get it going. You'll rank up higher on the searches. And then from there, it kind of takes a life of its own. Because at this point, for our main keywords, we rank 4 or 5 different shirts on the front page for all our main keywords.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's automatic. I mean, this last couple weeks have been the best couple weeks we've had on Amazon in 2 years. It's been awesome.
I mean, are there any, like, secret tactics that seem to actually work, or is it really as simple as just honestly describe it and then put it up for sale? Because I know that, like, Ryan Moran sells these crazy $1,000 kits telling you the secrets of Amazon. Is that just hocus pocus?
I mean, they have tactics, but I think in the end, the number one thing is put it up, send traffic, and make sales.
Because that will automatically make you rank higher, any sales.
Yeah, I mean, and if you can figure out a way to filter out non-buyers before they get to the sales page, then it helps you because...
Oh, really?
Because what Amazon is looking at, they're looking at 3 things. Mm-hmm. They're looking at, are you getting traffic from multiple sources? So the more different websites you send traffic from, Amazon sees that as being a source of authority.
Oh, okay. So you'd be better off with Google, Facebook, Instagram, and like a blog, then you would be just Facebook.
If you set up, let's say you set up three random blogs, just you made them yourself, but they have three different names, and you have a sales page, sort of, you know, like a sales page of, hey, here's this shirt. They come to that page, they click the button to go to Amazon. Amazon views it as a different site. And so if you could do that three or four different ways, but first of all, and what that does too is that filters out the non-buyers, because the non-buyers aren't going to go that extra step. So now that you're filtering out the non-buyers, you're getting the more targeted traffic to Amazon, your conversion rates are going to be higher. And Amazon is going to look at that favorably, because Amazon wants to make sure that the traffic on their site is buying the most amount of stuff with the least amount of clicks.
So you're better off setting up a blog. It says blah, 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 product. Click here to buy the product. Then they click from your page. Then it opens in Amazon. And then they're basically ready to buy already because they clicked a buy now button on your page.
Yeah, because they already went through that extra step.
Right. So they're not just reading your product listing and then bailing.
Exactly. I mean, because if you send, let's say you sent 100 people straight to Amazon and only one person bought, that would be less, that would be more frowned upon than if you sent 100 people to Amazon and 30 people bought.
So you would be better off running, like let's say you did this with just straight Google Ads. Don't go Google Ad straight to the Amazon page. Go Google Ad to landing page to Amazon.
Yeah, or test
that way you can lose them
or
on
do
the
it
landing
all.
Page, I mean, but it won't affect your score.
I would say do it all. I mean, do it straight to Amazon, do it through a landing page, and do them both, because then, like we said earlier, that diversifies traffic a little bit more too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they're also going to see like, oh, this traffic came from Google. We should trust it. And that'll probably help your Google rankings as well, which is, I think that's the part that no one talks about. Is
Google rankings?
Google rankings. Because think about it. Amazon is one of the most authoritative sites on the internet. You set up your Amazon listing. You SEO it. People are also going to Google and searching for stuff.
Real quick, what's SEO it mean just for that?
So when you set up your Amazon listing, what I would do is run Facebook ads to the Amazon listing. Mm-hmm. Straight to the Amazon listing. And because that link will have shares and likes from Facebook, Google looks favorably upon that. And then they will rank your Amazon listing higher. And then if you start running Google ads straight to your Amazon listing, they're also going to rank your organic higher from that as well.
So then you can find yourself getting free organic traffic also, because you're just showing up for search results.
I mean, because like I can tell you my website, that we have never done any actual what people would call SEO, like buying links and stuff.
Uh-huh.
We've never done that. All we've done is just run a ton of Facebook traffic. And because of the analytics of how many shares and likes from Facebook we've gotten, that has helped us rank number 3 for our top term. Above people who have been in this industry for 10, 20 years. Been in my niche for 10, 20 years.
How do you not shotgun your listings all over the place and make it a mess? Like if you have a shirt about railroads, shirt about surfing, and a shirt about trucks, are you making sure that just your brand name is like the thing that you're trying to rank high for on the Google listings?
No, I'd want to be ranking for a trucks shirt, railroad shirt, surfing shirt.
So don't think about your brand as what you're ranking. Try to rank your concepts.
I mean, especially if you're just getting started, if no one knows what your brand is, what's the point of ranking for it?
Right.
I mean, I could go out there and rank number 1 for Joe Blow, whatever, but if nobody's looking for it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And the fact is, there's thousands of people already searching for surfing shirts.
So you don't want to be surfrider.com ranking, because you might be the only person owning that domain. You want to do
exactly
cool California surfing tee and be the number one result.
Exactly. I want to be a number one result of something people are already looking for. Because why try to manufacture? Again, it goes back to like, why try to manufacture something when all you want to really do is get in front of the eyeballs that are already there. I mean, this whole entire game is just putting your offer in front of enough people that actually want what you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the simplest way to put it. I mean, over time, build an audience that you can keep putting offers in front of that they actually want.
Yeah. So that's basically your strategy over and over, even if you don't sell t-shirts. You just want to offer them something they want, and you just want to have that audience care about something that you can sell them, regardless of what it is.
Yep.
So when you've had some failures, you said earlier that you just kind of abandon ideas quickly. Is that Is that true, like, even years down the line? Or do you have some success just because of your name where you're selling things that maybe aren't even as good? I mean, do you feel like you could run on your own hype? Or do you feel like you're always playing this game of, like, what do people want? And then you're just serving them instead of creating a
You're always serving the audience.
It's always serving them. So you can't be artsy about it.
I mean, I'm still to this day, I'll make a design that I think looks so good. And in the end, no one cares. No one wants it.
Even though they might have been loyal to you for 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, I have people who have bought 10 different designs. But they're only... There's some designs they're just not going to buy because they don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's designs I get so excited about and I'll run ads and they don't work. And whatever, cut my losses.
Yeah.
Because I'm paying $100 to get it made. So I'm already in $100.
How are you doing that with the graphic designer? Or did you have a guy that's your graphic designer or are you using like 99 designs?
I've done it all. Dude, I've done it all. I mean, we've gone through at least 100 designers.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And they just... Wait, what happens? They just suck? Or they bail? Or they're expensive?
Everything. I mean, you get a designer and they take too long to get something back to you, you cut them. You get a designer and they make something... They show you a portfolio that looks exciting, and when you give them what you want to make and it comes out looking really bad, you cut them.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get sassy with you. You don't have time for that nonsense. You cut them. We end up with two.
After four years,
we have two that we can depend on. We found one of them on Behance. Isn't it? No, Dribbble. We found one of them on Dribbble, which I had to search through about 200 portfolios to find this guy on Dribbble. I wrote probably about 20 different people, and this guy got back to me with a good price, and I liked what he did. Honestly, a lot of designers want way too much money for what they do.
What?
I'm sorry, they want way...
You don't appreciate the art of graphic design?
No.
No.
not that much.
Yeah. How much do you think is a fair price? For, like, a good design. Especially if you're going to throw them away as quickly as you're throwing them away.
For a great design, maybe $200. And that's... I'm talking great.
That's, like...
Great.
Absolutely selling.
Yeah, that's, like... Yeah, that's... I'm talking top of the line. But average, I would like to pay about $100.
So did you ever make a deal with any of these guys where they got, like, a profit share?
No.
Just because...
But I would give bonuses. I would give bonuses. I've given lots of bonuses.
So you give a bonus when it succeeds.
When they make 10 different designs, and let's say 6 of them work, and one of them works really well, I'll give them a bonus to make them feel good. Because you want to keep talent.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I just told you how hard it was to find those two. I want to keep those people there.
Right.
So Christmas, every Christmas we give bonuses. We give bonuses randomly throughout the year when they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You can't treat it like art, basically.
No.
You have to just...
It's not art at all. It's just
t-shirt designs.
It's just what it is.
Yeah. So about $100 most of the time you think is a fair price.
Yeah. We'd pay one person 80, we'd pay the other person 120.
And how many designs do they do for you in like a month?
Depends on the month.
Yeah.
I haven't had one made in a couple months just because I've been so focused on what we do have.
Oh, okay. So you may not do it for a long stretch of time since you're just reselling the old designs.
Yeah, I mean, when we used to get in our real heyday, we were getting 3 or 4 designs a week.
Mm-hmm.
But that also was a time where we could put up almost anything, and we could at least make 100 back. But the market has completely changed. Completely changed. Now you have to find things where you have to really find the right thing now to sell.
How do you do your market research to find something that is actually going to be a winner?
I would say Pinterest. Pinterest is almost the number one.
How are you using Pinterest to do that?
Go through Pinterest and I look for repins of different memes and stuff. And there's a tool, I can't think of the name of it, but there's a tool that allows you to sort Pinterest, but the different pins based on how many repins it has.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I can go through and look at what people are liking to share. And then from there I go through and think, okay, could this be a good shirt? Could this be a good shirt for my audience? And then once I get it made, then what I'll do is I'll test it first before I run even $1 in ads now. I'll test it first with my existing audience and see if it actually has any legs. And then if it does, then I'll try to run some ads to it.
So you're using just organic reach to do your first sales?
Yeah.
Because if no one buys it, you just figure it's already a bad idea.
Yeah, especially if I send out an email to 80,000 people and I only make one sale.
Then why in the world would you spend money on ads?
That's an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big issue.
Yeah. Well, the 80,000 people is a huge email list. I mean, how many sales, when something's doing well, how many sales can you get off 80,000 people on email?
It's not as many as you would think. I'd be happy to get 10.
What?
Yeah.
From an email list of 80,000 people?
Well, I mean...
What do you think that is? It's just...
Because only 5% of the people open it?
Oh, okay. So open rates are already a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the state of email these days.
And then not many people are necessarily excited to buy even when they open it.
Exactly.
So if you sell 10 shirts on an email blast...
But if I sell 10 shirts on email blast, I'm already breaking even from the design.
Right.
It tells me there's interest. So
and
at that
then you'll go run an ad campaign?
Exactly. So at that point, I can go to that next little step and start testing out some ads and seeing if they can catch something. And then if that takes off, then I take it to the next level and invest in inventory.
Okay. So you're running like a Teespring campaign first, and then you're buying screen printing?
Give or take. I mean, I'm not using Teespring, but yeah, using DTG campaign.
Okay.
And I mean, but I keep it so limited because the prices are so much higher that I don't want to spend a ton of money sending ads to a listing where I'm not making good enough margins.
Mm-hmm.
So if I see that it's really going to take off, then I'll just kind of shut it down. Print stuff, then with having the inventory, I know I'm saving money on the production side and it's a faster delivery.
It's way cheaper when you do the screen.
Way cheaper, yeah.
Like, it's not even close.
And not even close to the delivery time, so.
Yeah.
It's at that point, it makes it worth doing. But I'm not going to go out and spend $1,000 in inventory, $2,000 in inventory, without first validating the idea. That's where I think a lot of people get themselves into trouble, is they don't validate.
So they just get excited and buy a whole bunch of inventory for something nobody's going to want to buy.
Exactly. I mean, and why do that? Like, why put yourself in a situation? So Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, he said in there, the best way before you start an idea is to take that idea, set up a sales page, make it look like the person's going to be able to buy it. They press the Buy Now button. Take them all the way to the part where they have to put their credit card in. And if they actually get to that part, then you know they would have bought it. And that's how you validate the idea. Getting people to sign up for a wish list or hey, it's going to come out soon, sign up for this list, that tells you absolutely nothing. Because 100 people will say, hey, I'm interested. But still, you might only get one person to buy it.
Yeah.
So you have to really validate that people are willing to spend their hard-earned money for that. And because I told you earlier, I don't like to differentiate myself by price. So I will sell my things for $24. So I'll sell a t-shirt for $24 that other people will try to sell for $10. But the thing is by selling it for $24, first of all, I'm making enough margin to run the ads to it. But I'm also saying, hey, look, my stuff has more quality compared to that $10 person who people are looking at it as, hey, it's just $10.
Mm.
Then they're making and they're making no margins, so they can't really run ads to it.
Right. Yeah, so I mean they're not making any money.
Yes. So that's why I want to know people actually are gonna buy my shirt.
Yeah.
For the price I need to get for it. Before I even go spend the money on inventory.
So how are you doing your lifestyle shots or your advertising shots? Are you paying models for that stuff? Or because it
we just give
like
out
you
shirts.
Test so much. Oh, you give out shirts.
Yeah, we have a group of probably like 6 or 7 people who just we give shirts to. And they'll take pictures for us.
And like with cell phones?
Yeah, or real cameras.
And you're just posting like shots of normal people in shirts as your lifestyle?
Basically.
So you're not paying for photographers or models basically ever?
No. I mean, they're happy because they're getting exposure to our audience.
Because
we're tagging them in the post. So they're getting exposure. We get free pictures.
And it makes you look so much more real.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of
totally.
Some just like weird... bright picture.
But we do make them sign contracts.
To say what? What's this contract to?
That we are allowed to use their photos in our promotions.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And that they cannot sue us for it or anything like that.
So are you using the pictures of these girls like in the ads or are your ads just like floating t-shirts?
Both.
Both. Which, what normally performs better?
Depends.
Yeah. There's not like an obvious trend.
It's just testing. I mean, no, there's no set trend at all. It's just testing. Just for each different shirt, test a floating shirt on a white background, test a floating shirt on a wood background, test a floating shirt on a metal background, and then test a shirt on a person.
Have you had any success with like some of the little weird fancy ads, like story ads or video ads, or do you just do like a single text ad with a picture of it?
I usually just keep it simple. So normally I'll do an image ad with the text in the description with a link.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also do link ads because of what I was telling you earlier. with using the analytics from all the shares and likes from that ad, it will help that page rank better in Google. So I use that to kind of boost the Google rankings.
So is there any way people could reach you if they wanted to maybe have you do consulting or something?
BrendanWenzel.com. So BrendanWenzel.com. That has my social links on it, and I believe it has a button to email me.
Cool. Well, awesome. Thanks for coming by and doing the podcast. You gave about a million tips today, so I think it worked out pretty well.
Hope so.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Just a reminder, for the screen printing class here in LA, we have classes February 10th through the 11th and April 21st through the 22nd of 2018. Hopefully you guys can come out. Thanks a lot. Bye.